Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. We are continuing our series on tithing versus giving, what do the scriptures say? And we've been talking about the consequences of not learning the distinction. Not learning how to give. One of the big problems with that is that we slough off our responsibility to be managers and stewards of our own resources. We have this idea that, well, here's how this works. If you're taught that you tithe, the concept is that you send to a church or ministry or to God in some way a tenth of everything that comes in, either net or gross, before or after taxes, and then God is obligated to bless you or take care of you. Many people are finding out it doesn't work that way. They're finding out that though they've been sending their tithes and gifts and offerings to churches and ministries for years and sometimes decades and sometimes their whole life, now when they need help financially, it's not there. God doesn't come through for them, they think, and their church, their ministry, their fellow Christians aren't coming through. So, in a very practical and real situation, believing this lie has caused many a financial downfall, sometimes at the worst time in their lives, often when retiring or getting close to that age. So rather than blaming God or the church even, other fellow believers, we start with, am I believing the truth? Does what I believe come from God or somewhere else, anywhere else? And we will continue to believe something as long as it works. So when something in your life is failing, you want to go, okay, do I need to change what I'm believing? Rather than I need to try harder, go back to your presumptions, your assumptions about why you're doing what you're doing. And what we're talking about in the world of finances is not about your budget. Whether you should pay your mortgage or not, whether you should fulfill your obligations or not. Your finances are your responsibility, regardless whether you're a Christian or not. It doesn't really change. The difference between a believer's attitude towards money and a non-believer's attitude towards money is that for believers, this is a major field that God uses in our lives to train us. Because it's so important, we are not going to be particularly blessed over a non-believer in the realm of finances because we are a believer. We're not due something. God does not owe us financially or any other area over non-believers. Now, because we are spirit beings, sons of God, heirs of the kingdom. We've already inherited. We are co-inheritors and joint heirs with Christ. All the resources of the kingdom are at our disposal. Just as all the power, all the knowledge, all the understanding, the wisdom is all available to us. Now, I don't see that happening in my life, in anybody's life. I don't see anybody walking around having the same effect that Jesus did, for instance. It's not because it's not available. It's because we haven't had the training. We haven't had those wounds healed, the lies dispelled, the hindrances between our soul and our spirit are still too great. And when we are taught emphatically over and over again that the only thing you need to worry about is, does what you believe line up with Scripture? How much are you missing? Is that working for you? Or are you just going to try harder? Now, fortunately, God intervenes in our life, and He's generous, and He's merciful. And unfortunately, we often interpret that as an affirmation of what we believe. I'm sure you've been in churches that when you visit and they take up a tithe or an offering, and then you go into the prayer time and somebody, you know, for prayer requests, and somebody has this sob story about how they've been out of work for X number of weeks or years or months or whatever. They can't get a job. And this person in their family is sick and the kids are going without food. And you take up an offering for them. Well, what does that do? That confirms to them that they're on the right track. God will make a way for us as we do the work. I love the parable of the talents, where there was three different levels of involvement with the talents. They were given different amounts and they did different things with them. And the one that had the least did the least with it, and therefore it was taken from them. So for you and I, and this was not even just to Christians, he was talking to everyone. When you and I think about what it is we have an expectation for, we want to do the least to get it. When God's attitude is, do the most you can, because that gives Him more opportunity. One of the reasons Christians desire a word of knowledge or a word of wisdom or the prophetic working in their lives, or even to hear God, is to decrease the number of mistakes they make, to decrease the amount of trial and error. For instance, when you're looking for a job, what do you want to do? You want to be able to hear from the Lord, and go apply for that job, and get the job. We all try to make it as easy on ourselves as possible. And it's time we ask ourselves, is that God's intent for us? Let's not draw conclusions based on our own response, what works in our life temporarily. We ask him. We respond to the training he's giving us. God's not an answer man, where you type in your question and he gives you a bunch of answers and you pick the one that fits. You know, like those magic eight balls where you just keep on turning it until you find an answer that fits your question. We also have this idea that the more, shall we say, spiritual you are, the more mature you are, the more clearly you hear God, that the more specifically you'll hear him. When the opposite is true, because you're already hearing him clearly in your spirit, that the more you are in tune with him, the less he'll have to say. Because you're already in line with him. You're already hearing him. You're already responsive to him. What does he have to say then? It will come down to that still quietness, that rest and peace guides us. Because when it's disturbed, we know he's drawing our attention because we are living in his presence with that awareness. But it's work to get there. And there's this domino effect about our beliefs. You know, we think that just, you know, gutting it through this life, if I can just make it through being faithful, not giving up, not backsliding, not just, you know, counting everything that, you know, God's going to do this. He says it in his word. He's going to do this. My pastor told me this. This is what he's going to do. I really feel like he said this to me about this, that if I will do this, he will do this. And we don't test it. We don't look back and say, okay, now, that didn't work out the way I expected. Why? We don't learn from our past, let alone learning from others. But we can. So let's look at the tithing issue. Again, if we believe that God is obligated in some way, or will automatically, or wants to take care of us financially as long as we give to the church or tithe to the church or to him in some way. If we do this, God is then available or free or motivated or must respond. That's not much of a relationship. And it also doesn't work because God is never obligated. In your life, as a spirit being, he's satisfied with you right now. The circumstances that are going on in your life have been crafted to reveal to you the hindrances, the stone wall between your soul and your spirit. It's not to reveal his glory. It's not about him. It's about you. It's not about judgment. It's not about conviction or revelation or the time and the season. About you. You and you. Your soul and your spirit. It's not that complicated, but it's hard. because it is all about us. We've not been taught how to embrace the conflict, that the warfare is totally within us. Now, certainly that doesn't mean that there's not warfare with our enemies. But the other enemies, the world system, and the devil, the Satan and all his little buddies, they have already been defeated. They are still there, and we are still here on this earth to learn how to conquer them. Not that they need to be reconquered, but so that we can learn the same habits that were used originally. When Jesus walked the earth, he conquered those, the world system and Satan. Satan came to him and he found no way to tempt him, to deceive him, to depress him. Because Jesus knew how to go to his Father because he was born of the Spirit. That's what we are learning. And when we look to something else other than the same, using the same technique, shall we say, the same relationship as Jesus, we have added to Christianity. We have added to the simplicity of relationship with God. So one of the big problems we have is with authority. Now, I've told before about how I've been involved in several ministries before, and some of them have grown to be quite big, and some of them have gone by the wayside totally. But they're often built around this whole notion of who gets to decide truth. A vision for the ministry, or a vision from God. And then that is what draws others. And very often what happens is someone may very absolutely have a genuine revelation from God and be acting on it exactly the way they're supposed to. But as quote-unquote followers of quote-unquote leaders, we very often aren't doing anyone any good by following anyone, period. When we have this distinction between followers and leaders, we're saying somebody's closer to God or has more authority in our lives, spiritually speaking. Now, I'm not talking about the natural realm, and I'm not talking about the supernatural realm. There are definitely levels of authority there. But let's put it bluntly. You have one spiritual authority in your life, and that is God himself. That authority in your life is expressed through your spirit. Period. End of sentence. Close the book. Not through a book, your pastor, your spouse, your parent, your beliefs, your history, your situation. Spiritual authority is expressed and exercised only spirit to spirit, and only from your spirit to your soul, and then finally affecting your body. So when we look for an authority, someone to make decisions for us, tell us how we're doing in God's eyes, to confirm for us a word, to give us a word, to give us direction, to give us healing. When we turn to anything or anyone first, we are denying our own identity. This is easily traceable when we talk about tithing. Because who is it that teaches about tithing? So many people now are getting so disappointed with their church that they've been giving to all these years, that they've been tithing to, they've been donating to the building fund, they've been, every time there's an extra missionary need or any kind of need, they put in something. They're faithful givers. But then when they need something and they go to the church, when they go to the pastor, sorry, we don't have anything coming in. We can't help you. And they blame the church or they blame God rather than, well, then what was I doing all that for? And that's the question you should ask. Where'd you get those beliefs? Let's be honest with ourselves. It's easier to rely on someone, a person we can see, or a belief that everybody else holds to be the authority in our life, rather than go through the work that is involved of getting our wounds healed and having those lies changed. Cooperating with God as He removes our flesh, strips us of those things that have been filling our needs, so that we are able to receive His life that now resides in our spirit, into our soul, and finally into our body. We've been indoctrinated into this fellowship of the believers. Well, I don't know about you, but most of the time I've ever attended a church, I've left just as empty than when I got there. And it doesn't matter if you hug people and go out to lunch with them or pray with them and shed tears with them. That's not fellowship. That's commiseration. That's all surface. Doesn't mean you don't love them. Doesn't mean that they don't love you. But that's not what God intends. You go to any 12-step program, they're going to do the same thing. A lot of other programs, a lot of other churches that don't believe in God, other religious organizations, they go through the same thing with the same effect. So what God is doing in your life is between you and Him. And learning to hear from Him in every aspect of our lives, we will have to call into question our beliefs. That's where it all starts. And when you can start with a blank sheet of paper, okay, God, I'm going to assume that everything I believe is up for grabs. And I'm willing to drop it all because I trust that you are strong enough and fully able to convince me of what is from you, of what is truly truth. And as we do that, nothing may change. But you'll know within that You've made that transaction with him. You've given him the okay to touch anything in your life that may be interfering with that flow of truth because it's someplace where you're holding on to a lie. We all believe lies, all of us. Not intentionally. I mean, of course, if you knew it was a lie, you wouldn't believe it. So we all think everything that we believe is truth. It's God who convinces us of righteousness, of what is right. It's also called conviction. He's not all that concerned about convicting you of doing something wrong or believing something wrong. He wants you to know the truth. He wants to convict you of unrighteousness and convince you of righteousness. When we say, oh, God loves you, do you know what that means because you've experienced it? There's that song, you know, we all learn as a youngster that just feeds the exact attitude we're thinking of, we're talking of. Jesus loves me, this I know, because the Bible tells me so. If that's all you've got, God's going to convict you of a lot. Let's know him for real. It's going to change our attitude towards people, towards authority. This is one of the weird things that happens. And I get people, emails, great emails from people that have been with me, especially those that have been with me for a while. And it's really made a change in the way they see their church, their fellowship, their home group, their fellow believers, and how much they've been relying on them to let them know how they're doing or what's God doing now. And so many go through this phase, well, now that I know that I don't need them, that I've been relying on them improperly, do I leave the group? Do I leave the church? Do I push away and break from that group, those people? And my response is hopefully not. God may say so. But there's no reason to. Now that you're free from them, you're not going to be influenced by them. You're free to go. You're free to stay. Now what happens with this tithing thing? So often when, and many other issues as well, not just tithing, but when your church leader finds out one way or another, that you're not tithing and that you're not susceptible to his authority in that area, that if you're not tithing, you can't participate. You may have gotten over that. And you may feel free and fine and even more grateful for the group, for that church, and enjoy it more and more. But those in authority and even your fellow believers that now know you don't believe in something they believe, it changes them. So there'll be opportunities moment by moment, day by day, to allow the Lord to show us where we are relying on others or our own beliefs that he wants to put his finger on. Again, this doesn't mean this is not just about money, because money is your resource that you are in charge of. But we ask him for every opportunity be in his presence, and he will remove everything that is interfering with that. So we'll pick it up there next Saturday. You can always get in touch with me at diane@wecanprepare.org. It's always good to hear from you, and I appreciate all the great questions and ideas and feedback. So thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend. This is Diane Thomas of Prepare Radio. Until next Saturday.